Winspiration, the way to the essential. On UK Health Radio, Winspiration brings wisdom and information for an extraordinary future. Together, we can shape the world we want to live in. So let's get real and create the idea. Be extraordinary. Welcome to another episode of Winspiration Radio. And we have a very interesting guest today, Dr. Ken Westen. He is really a very special expert on so many levels. He started studying classical medicine. He was a typical eye doctor. And from there, he realized, oh, there must be more in health. And he became a speaker, mentor, really a performance scientist. He worked in the university at Oxford and teaching there how we can get to a higher level of performance. He worked in Sports Science Institute in Stellenbosch, South Africa. He lives in Zurich, where I normally more is, and he is at the moment in Zurich, and I'm in South Africa. So interesting how it comes. And we got to know each other talking about a lot of teal competence, so where the consciousness should go, where companies should and how companies should work in the future. And I'm really interesting now, and be aware from a lot of ahas and insight, because Dr. Vess is not only someone who knows a lot, so he has an interesting experience and journey. Well, I guess we all can learn a lot about it. So a very warm, happy welcome, Ken, that you're on the show and had the time. And how was it starting as a essentially normal doctor, classical medicine study? And what was the change that you opened up to a totally different level of seeing things, energies, and everything in the world?
Well, I think that. Thanks for having me, Wolfgang. We'll see where this interesting conversation goes, or maybe it's not interesting. But, I was thinking there, you just ask, well, where was the surprise, in the shift in thinking? And I think it was going into the final year of professional school. And one day all of my classmates, we just woke up and thought, we don't know anything. Here we've gone through, 4 years of undergraduate school, and we've completed 3 years of professional school. And then it's like, well, what do we really know? And I think that that's one of the things, you grow up and you think that, all right, I'll go to university, I'll get a degree, and then I'll know what I need to know, and then I'll go and work. And I think it's a misconception that what really happens is that you learn how to learn, and you learn some basics, and you learn what other people believe the way the world works. And then you go to start to work, and then you find out, well, it works some of the time, but it doesn't work all the time. Well, why doesn't it work all the time? Well, mm-hmm. As a doc, if you're working with humans, no two humans are the same. There's no absolute. They don't all react the same to antibiotics. They don't all react the same to any kind of stimulus. There's always a variation. And so you can either just stay with the limitations. But, okay, that's the limitations, what I can do. Or you can start to investigate. Oh, you can start to learn, use your own experience, and start to figure out, oh, okay, well, in this case, this works.
Did I get it right? The first limitation is, so when you said, oh, we treat everybody the same, and then realizing, oh, there's all individuals. They don't have not only an individual fingerprint, so they're totally, the whole system is individual. So we need to open up and learn how to treat them individually.
Yes. Each person as an individual, and to another thing in the professional school, we're taught how to bully, the patients, as mm-hmm. to, we're the expert, You know nothing. You answer my questions, and I'll tell you what to do. And disempowering the patient, you know, the person that you're working with, so you're not listening to them and what they know, because many times what they do know is a distraction, isn't really relevant, but sometimes it is. And if you don't ever listen to it, then you're going to miss out on the times that it is valid information.
Well, that is not only medicine, that's a system. You grow up like this in school, and my background law, it was the same thing. The client doesn't know anything, and we tell them what to do.
So, you know, I think if that's I think many industries and most of the world works on trying to disempower you. And to even the concept of what you think and what you feel. I don't know who decided along the way that they could tell you, oh no, you shouldn't feel like that, or oh no, you shouldn't think like that, or oh no, you shouldn't do that. And because, you know, I find that there's nothing's all wrong and nothing's all right. You know, they're just different consequences. And if you're prepared for the consequence or the outcome, then, and that's something you want to do and you want to have that experience, all right, then, you know, do it. But, you know, you may decide, oh, I don't, well, after you've done it, oh, I don't want to do this. This isn't what I thought it is. And, you know, you create your own learning model of how the world works based on your experience. I think life is an interactive experiment.
Do I get it right at that point? You could have said as a doctor, okay, I open up a clinic and treat my patients different. But with these empowerment, was this the idea that you then moved more in the field of the performance? How do we get better performance?
Well, I started working in the field of sport and elite sport, which, you know, as you know, I've worked at international level in 48 sports in 44 countries. And, you know, I've worked with Olympic gold medalists and world champions in many, many different sports. And, you know, that's really is my addiction is human performance. And because everything that humans do that we do is human performance, whether it's us, you know, functioning as a doctor trying to work with patients, or is, you know, are we feeding ourselves? Are we clothing ourselves? Are we, you know, are we creating the, you know, the experience that I think I find that most people are driven by? They want a vision for a better life. They want to feel significant. They want to feel like they're valued, that they have value. They want to feel accepted, that they belong, ultimately, that they're loved. And the fourth one is that they're fulfilled, that what they do matters. And so if you're trying to, you know, achieve those, well, that's human performance. That's what drives us whether it's a conscious or a subconscious level. It's what we're trying to do, what we're trying to accomplish, and leads to, well, are we happy? Are we at, you know, do we have joy and happiness in our life? Are we, do we have peace in our life? And ultimately, do we have love in our life? So, you know, that's that ultimate experience. You know, working with all of the sportsmen, you know, they have goals and there's rules of what they can and cannot do. And, you know, there's a structure you have to work within. But they're all trying to achieve that ultimate experience, which could be winning a major golf tournament or winning a world championship or winning an Olympic medal. And in that process, you know, that, you know, they're trying to, I find there's three things they're trying to do is they're trying to create the magic. And I've certainly found, you know, examining and looking at my own life is that the most fun, what brings me the most joy is when the magic happens, when it's, and, you know, magic's not explainable. It's not comprehensible. It's not understandable. It's the same thing with humor and laughter. If you analyze humor, it's not funny anymore.
Yeah, so magic, what do you exactly mean by this, even if it's not really understandable, how you would describe it?
Well, you know, we're used to magicians that create things that, you know, whether it's by distraction or by, you know, technique, that they can create a surprise, something that's unexpected, that's, and it's to in your mind is unexplainable. It's like, how did that happen? Why did that happen? Because we all have those things that happen in our life that we think, what? How did that happen? Why did that happen? What happened here? Why did, you know, whether it's synchronicity or coincidence, if you want to call it that, but we all have these things that, you know, you, in a huge airport, you run into someone that you know, or you, you know, you show up at an event and there's someone there that
mentioned synchronicity and says, okay, I guess everybody experiences somehow like running in someone into someone in the airport. But isn't it also a kind of level of consciousness that you can live more on the level of synchronicity? And doesn't it lose a kind of magic?
I think synchronicity is feedback from the, you know, the universe that you are in alignment, you know, you're in alignment with who you truly are and what you're doing, what you're supposed to be doing. And the more you're aligned, you know, whether it's with your, you know, aligned with divine will, or you're divine with aligned with the universe or universal laws, but however you want to look at it or think about it. But the more you aligned you are, then synchronicity happens. And that's one of the symptoms that, okay, you're headed down the right road. And if you're headed, if your thoughts or your thinking, your actions are not what you would like to have, you know, if they're not what aligned with who you truly are, then life gets bumpier and it gets more and more bumpy and more difficult. And, you know, so the synchronicity is the positive side of you're going the right way, and difficulty, struggle, suffering is showing you're headed the wrong way. You're thinking the wrong way. You're, you know, so that those are both powerful gifts that help us to find our way.
It sounds a little bit, say promising or even, so too good to be true. If I'm aligned, everything is easy.
Well, it's too good to be true, but it's not easy to stay, keep that alignment. And that's because of our, I'll call it our subconscious programming, our programming that's I've been researching in our limbic brain and in our brainstem and in our fascia and our gut brain and our heart brain and, you know, those six different brains. But you know, we're set up that that's, you know, I've been mapping the epigenome and what are the concepts that we use to create this experience and to create this life. And one of those is we're set up that we have to have this inner conflict that your logical brain says, yes, I want to do that. And your subconscious goes, no, you don't. That's going to be bad.
Yeah.
And so we have that internal conflict. So you can say, oh, yeah, no, if I'm truly aligned, everything goes with grace and ease. Well, it does. But our programming is to yank us out of it quickly and effectively all day long. Mm-hmm. So it's too good to be true to think that it would happen automatically without you doing the work to resolve the concepts of your inner conflict.
You said now the mind wanted something and then the programming says no, something from inside, the so-called subconscious or whatever, what your word for that is. But if you aligned, you don't listen to the mind nearly anymore. So you really go with the flow or guidance. You listen so much, like normal people say, to the gut and not to the mind.
Right. Listen to them, whether it's the gut or the heart. Both of those minds are really powerful. You know, the gut's usually telling you where it's not safe, and the heart's taking you to what you love and, you know, what you want to experience. You know, you can, those are set up, to help us, our programming has them where they, like you said, they help keep us on the track. But, you know, it's like keeping that constant vigilance of, you know, am I making the right decisions? And I think that if you want to simplify decision making, because decisions are what keep you on the track or not. And if you're making a decision and you're checking yourself to say, okay, is this true or is this false? Is a good question. Or maybe better, probably a better question is this positive, creating positive energy in my life, or is this creating negative energy in my life? Mm-hmm. And another one is this making my life more complex, more complicated, or is it making my life simpler? And the third one is this bringing me enjoyment, pleasure, or is this bringing me struggle and suffering?
No questions, and now something inside is answering. Like before you said, there is a programming saying no, or is really now the heart saying something. How to really be clear who is talking there? The old programming, or let's say really my heart?
That's why those three questions I just threw at you, I think are what help us tell which is the heart. You know, if you're stopping and looking at, is this creating, you know, positive energy or negative energy?
Mm-hmm.
If it's with the heart, it's only positive energy.
Mm-hmm.
If it's with your brain, your mind, your ego, I call it your false self. You know, if mm-hmm. it's your false self, then it creates pain, suffering, struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a choice. But if you're monitoring, what am I doing? How am I thinking?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and am I working with my dreams?
Is this right to say the body is a kind of bipolar system? So if the cells are opening up, it's mainly good. Or if it goes more tight and I feel more tension, then I need to be very careful. Maybe then I'm on the wrong track.
Well, that's, yeah, if you're getting more stress, more tension, more anxiety, more pressure, all of those are signs showing you that, you know, you're moving towards the negative energy.
And talking now about high performance again with the athletes, so somehow you were capable to help them so be more in this better energy flow.
Right, by looking at what are they thinking. You know, we started off looking at, you know, people talk about confidence. Do you have confidence or not? Well, confidence mm-hmm. is knowing what to do, when to do it, and how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're working with people that... Then that, you know, in the world of sport, I always say, if you can create the unexpected, then you win.
Mm-hmm.
And get the other person to start to think and try to figure things out, then you have an advantage, and you can, you know, beat them with speed or with accuracy or diversion or whatever. So it's just keeping to look at, you know, what's happening and how am I reacting to the situation.
In sports, quite often, this is a kind of win-lose situation. But now when we look at society, do we really want to think in this win-lose? And or how can we all win? Is there really a win-win society possible?
Well, one of the statements, one of the quotes that I'm known for making with my elite performers is, when you win, you lose. And when you lose, you win.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the big deal about winning?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're set up that, you know, one person wins and everyone else loses, but that's not the case. When you win, you lose because you don't know how to improve because everything worked.
Mm-hmm.
But if you lose, you win because you can see how to improve to become better, because sport is just mm-hmm. about you achieving your potential or you performing to the highest level.
Yeah, so classical, Buffett always said, we learn so much out of our mistakes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We only learn by making mistakes. We don't learn by doing things correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just don't make the same mistake over and over. You know, make it.
Make new ones.
Find a solution mm-hmm. and then solve that one. And that'll take you to where, okay, now there's a new one. So now we have to go learn the new one.
Mm-hmm. Could we say we learn something, go on a higher level, and there we need to figure it out again. And then we learn and go to the next level.
I think it's a misconception about higher levels of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding more, it's more about expansion.
Mm-hmm.
To expand, to become more. And it goes in all directions. It doesn't just go up or down. So it's more and more expanded. And it's, as you expand into it, there are different concepts and the different levels of expansion of consciousness that, you know, it's from Ken Wilber's work and integral theory or the spiral dynamics work is looking at how does consciousness expand, and there's a theme for each of the different bands of consciousness as you expand. And so, as you said, you expand into you, it's like you get to a new place you haven't been before, and if you stick around there and observe, you can learn how it works, what are the rules, how can I be successful to have the experience I'm looking for in that new place.
Yeah, so you can agree when I say there is no higher consciousness, so just consciousness is. It's just a question how much I can see of it, or I can be aware of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree.
Super. That is wonderful. So a good time to make a short break. Okay.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
That is fine if we understand that we are all consciousness, everything is consciousness. And now with the high performance thing, it was more in sports. But you developed your teaching or learning and teaching so much more. And a special moment was where you were close to Zurich. And then next to Zurich is a place where Emma Kunz worked. Very interesting. Well, today we would say maybe Heilpraktiker, naturopath. And she worked a lot with geometry and interesting paintings. And if I remember right, you said, wow, there you got very special insight that has led you also to work so much more with geometry.
Right. Well, I was introduced to the work of Emma Kunz, being in Switzerland. I had someone that I was working with that told me, oh, you need to go see Emma Kunz.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, sure. People tell me I need to go meet people, and I usually try to follow up on it because there's usually something great comes out of it. But I said, okay, where do I find her? And they said, oh, she's dead. And I thought, okay, that's interesting. What are you telling me? She died in, I think, 1963, and she was Swiss, and she was known for curing the incurables at the time, which was polio and tuberculosis. And so there's a museum built for her, and there's a book about her work. So I started going through the book and looking at it. It was all in Deutsch. And looking at it, and I just told all my education to go sit in the corner and to zip it, because this is something that has withstood time and produced a level of success that is not comprehensible with my education. But I thought, well, what if they're right? So let's just put the logic and all the education over to the side, and then let's start to test things. Because I think one of the tools that holds humanity back is this concept of skepticism. And it's about not trusting that someone finds something or you know, they believe what they believe. They have their own experience, and it may be accurate or not, depending upon what they focus on, but still being respectful that everyone has a journey and that people need to trust themselves. And I think our schooling systems and life in general teaches us to not trust ourselves. So we need to trust.
And Karl Popper said we have a wrong idea about how science should work. If you want to become a professor, create a thesis and defend it the rest of your life.
Correct.
Yeah, but we never can prove that a thesis is right. So we only can prove that it's wrong. So we should be happy if that's wrong, then we can go closer to truth.
Yeah, then we can move forward.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the thesis, you know, you have that, and that's what you find in academia, is that anyone that comes and challenges your thesis, then you want to destroy them. You want to belittle them or discredit them, as opposed to saying, okay, it's a different view. And it may be right some of the time. It may be right all the time. Maybe it's not right all the time, but let's examine it. Let's look at it. And that's one of the great things working with the Australians, is that when there's a new concept, you know, if you go take a new concept to the English, their response is, oh, I don't quite know about that. And if you take it to the Americans, you know, to the people from the US, then they'll say, really? Are you sure? And the Aussies will say, give it here. Let's test it. Let's take a look at it. Let's try it. Let's see if it works or not. Mm-hmm. And so their ability to adapt and to change is better than any other country that I've seen in the world.
Oh, that is interesting to hear that, because from observing from Europe, how they handled the corona period, and it was, they were so strict and rigid, didn't get the feeling, oh, let's test a lot of things.
Right. But if you look at what they did in Taiwan said, let's look at all the things that are banned by the other countries, mm-hmm. and let's do those and let's see what happens. Mm-hmm. And so they had almost no, they had very little infection rates. They had, you know, deaths, not, you know, just a normal death rate, nothing unusual, nothing different. And because they looked at, oh, if it's being banned, then it probably works.
Mm-hmm.
If it didn't work, you wouldn't ban it. So it's interesting. Yeah.
Coming back to Emma Kunz, and you saw, that, if I remember right, she was studying and then created all this geometry. And then one day, so it's the saying I heard is, she said, no, I understand everything, and she left. So what is in this geometric that you say, wow, the whole understanding of universe or high performance, everything is in there?
Well, you know, if you look at geometry makes up everything in our universe, everything we see. It makes up the neurons in our brain, form geometries. You know, there's geometry, there's shape, color in everything that we see, touch, you know, that we experience. And, you know, that's what it's the building blocks, and the Platonic solids are the building blocks of the universe. You know, everything that's created are built with those geometries. And I was looking to see, well, what is the language of your limbic brain, your brain stem, your heart brain, your gut brain? What language do they understand? Because it's not English, it's not German, it's not mm-hmm. French. So I was looking at, well, what would create a reaction? So I started drawing geometries like Emma Kunz, and then I was testing physiological response to the geometries. And then I tested, can we change it? You know, can we change that response? Because if this geometry makes you weak, then can we change it to where this geometry makes you strong? So that you're, what you're aligned with, or back to our concept of alignment, what you're aligned with, you know, makes you stronger, and what you're not aligned with makes you weaker. So, you know, so I just went down the journey of drawing images. You know, she drew about 700 in her career. And, you know, you can go see them. There's Emma Kunz, I think.
Impressive, really, if I don't understand it, but it's energy is strong.
Mm-hmm. And one of the visitors, they had a visitor from, you know, one of the Oppenheimers that worked on the Manhattan Project that created the atom bomb. He came and he saw one of the drawings and says, yeah, that's exactly how we created the atom bomb. And she drew it 20 years before they did it. So, mm-hmm. you know, hers came from meditation. She always did these geometric drawings within a 1 day cycle, within a 24-hour period. And, you know, to guide her building thing, she used a pendulum and concepts and meditation to figure out what line, what color. And they're not paintings, they're drawings with colored pencil, crayon, charcoal. Yeah. And she did over 700 of them in her career. And I just decided, okay.
How much are the lines and important? Or like you said, now there's different colors. Is the color also important?
Yes, colors, wavelength, you know, different colors, the different wavelengths. And
people who have a problem with seeing the colors right, doesn't matter?
But
the
waves matter.
Are the same?
Mm. Yeah, the waves are the same, even though the perception is of different. Color to them is different, but the different wavelengths and frequency is perceived the same. But it's interesting, even people that are blind, that have no physical sight, when they're exposed to the geometries, they can describe them, sensing using their sixth sense, or, you know, using different ways of perception. Some people would call it a third eye, using their pineal gland.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's interesting. And in YouTube, you find also a video that says and seems to prove that kids till the age of eight can really read with being blindfolded. So we just lose it, but if it trains, we can keep it. So it's really possible that a blind person can theoretically get all the information.
Oh, yes. No, I've worked with trainers. I even was fortunate enough to do the course in how you train children. Yeah, up to nine, it's easier to do it. But adults, you can still learn it. It's just more, our brains are not as pliable adaptable. So we kick it out. We reject what we see. But not only can they read, they can, as there was a young girl in England that she liked wearing her blindfold and riding her bike to school because it surprised everyone, and she had the fun of doing it. But I've seen children play sports and catch balls and there's a group in Indonesia, there's a martial art called MPE, and it's from the king of Indonesia. It looks after it, but they train martial arts blindfolded, and so they develop that vision. Yeah. And they have a competition where you ride a motorcycle with your blindfold, and you have to stop at a certain place, you have to get off, you have to find a camera, take a photo of a specific thing with the camera, you have to identify flags in the air that are flapping, what color they are. You have several things you have to use that sight to do, and get on the motorcycle and get to the finish line as a competition.
Well, my book, Better the Whole World Against Me Than My Soul, I write about an example of a martial art guy. Who says, standing in front of someone and has a stick or even a sword, hit me on my head. And then he took the head away when the hit came. So everybody is essentially, you see when it's coming.
Yes.
I said, okay, let's blindfold. And so he blindfolded, and everybody in the audience says, oh gosh, now it's difficult. And he said, no, that is so much easier. Because I'm not distracted with all this. Because if I would go with what I see, it's too late.
Right.
I need to be earlier when he starts. I have the intention to know to do it. So it was really interesting watching it. Yeah. Gosh, so we Is this part of your high performance training, really teach using our senses different?
Or to be aware of them. But, you know, more of high performance is recruiting reflexes or, recruiting your hardware and software the way we're designed and to work with it. Because we don't know that much about it. Yeah.
Taking limits away and coordinate better.
Correct.
Grow into it. Wow. What do you think? We see it like in sports, running 100 meters. It's a very slow advantage of another millisecond or whatever. What are humans, you think, are capable of? If we just need to get another, change and believe, and suddenly we are maybe 10 seconds faster?
Well, one of the things that I've found in researching with lots of people worldwide is that we have a glass ceiling, and that our subconscious only allows us to be so successful, and most people are that have university degrees that are successful or 60, they can be 60% successful, or really high achievers will be at 70%. But I've seen some humans that could only be successful 1%, and usually they have severe learning disabilities because their brain won't let them get anything right, maybe even the name on their paper. And when we remove that ceiling that says, if I get too successful, I have to self-sabotage, I have to self-destruct, I have to mess it up, I have to get an injury, or I have to, become angry and break the relationships or do something to get, kicked off the team or, be banned from the sport. So it's, just removing that barrier to your performance. And I think the reason we have it is it's a safety mechanism, because if you want to do something that's really detrimental to you and you can only be 60% successful, then that keeps you from, really damaging yourself or hurting yourself or really messing up when it's really not aligned with who you are.
Okay, that is understandable that there's a protection. But is it maybe also when he says with focusing, if I got hurt, I'm not so good in the team or thrown out of the team, that the humans survive because they worked always as a group, mainly as a group, not as an individual, so that we might maybe have a problem standing out?
There's programming in different countries, that there are countries where the programming is stronger to not, the tall poppy syndrome, don't stand out, don't draw attention to yourself, because that seems to be a consistent program. If someone really excels, then we either love them or we attack them.
I remember, just in Sweden, the Jantelag, or in German, we always, we have like a kind of Kaiserland yet, but America is more, okay, we can make it.
Right. Yeah, the Americans, instead of having that fear of success or fear of being punished because you're successful, the Americans, it's more trying too hard.
It's the opposite. They have the fear of being not successful. Then we don't know anymore.
Or that not working hard enough, not doing enough.
We're all only loved by results and not just by being.
Correct.
Coming back to Emma Kunz and the geometry, what just shared with me before is, you wrote a new book and use now, and I remember also when we met a few years ago in Zurich, you shared the computer screen and also with a group, how fast something can change. So you were at Emma Kunz, but you learned a lot now and use it a lot also.
Well, I'm finding that if you want to create changes, there are three effective ways to create change. And
three effective ways. Three, you said? Three. Yeah. Okay, let's keep that. I will make a note then and just make a short break. And then we go to the three, we'll say, areas what we can do to develop.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
A for horses, B for mutton, C more cheeks, dig for victory. E bar gold.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better.
Marks and Spencer.
Add Health Triangle Magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
T for two.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, now I'm ready to make notes. What are the three?
You can use words.
Mm-hmm.
You can use numbers.
It's still one.
Number
two, or is this... belongs to one, words and numbers.
Number two. One is words. Number two is numbers.
Yeah.
And number three is geometry, color, you know, the shape, color, movement.
You said before, it's the wavelength, so whatever, really.
Wavelength, frequency, shape, movement. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what is words? So do I understand right? Words is not frequency. Like if you go to Emoto and it says, oh, it's words are changing water crystals. So mm-hmm. must be something with energy as well.
Correct. Because mm-hmm. words create a frequency. So mm-hmm. that, you know, when, you know, I've worked with people that don't speak a word of English and I don't speak Italian.
Mm-hmm.
But their subconscious, when the subconscious hears a word, it will react as if they know it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what it's doing, it's, I think it's creating a frequency in your brain. It's creating a, you know, frequency creates geometry. We know that from the vibration of, you know, if you vibrate a plate.
Yeah, yeah.
Sand on it, it creates geometry. Or if you vibrate water, it creates mm-hmm. geometry. So, mm-hmm. you know, the geometry, you know, can create the sound or the energy or, you know, so words can create, you know, shape, geometry. And so I have a student that only uses words with the people that she works with and phrases. And, you know, I find that there's three ways to use words. And, you know, one is to create a request. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's certainly well known in the world of prayer. And, you know, to just, and then you can use words to resolve these paradoxes that we have in our subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, I don't want pain and I do want pleasure.
Mm-hmm. It's just a clarity collapse somehow. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can, if you, you know, I've developed a process where you find both sides of the paradox and you create a statement around it and then you lock it in. And mm-hmm. that creates shift really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And the third is to relate to something. In other words, to choose to connect to it. Because if you connect to something, then you always bring it back to you.
Mm-hmm.
So that relationships are that we keep coming back to that person or that place or that business, or, you know, if you have a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And we certainly, you know, relationship and business is more important to the Europeans as opposed to the Americans, which is just like more sales or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But so it's, you know, so if you're using words to choose to, you know, formalize or concretize your relationship with something, something that you love.
Then yeah, also the request, if I understand it right, is also if you go more on the question, have a professor said, and then it's open up for the brain, like the receptors, that a different answer can come in. Mm-hmm. And it helps also to sort of change your brain, really. Mm.
Well, all of these are changing your brain and on the conscious level and somewhat on the subconscious level. So we're seeing shifts and changes. Mm-hmm. It's slower because all of these you have to identify, you know, whether it's the original condition or what the positive side is and what the negative side is or what it is that you really want to create a relationship with or what you want to request to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those take your logical brain to figure these puzzles out. But if you want to shift things more quickly, okay, there's that we talked about the words. To talk about numbers, you know, most of the academic world remembers Pythagoras and for his theorems and about mathematics, but he had communities and their philosophy was that numbers resolved everything, that created everything, resolved everything. So what...
We are striving so much for money because that is easy for us to connect with numbers?
Perhaps. You know, I think that, you know, there are people that use numbers, like they write numbers on things or they'll get you to say numbers. And, and you know, and I've had some positive results utilize having people, you know, connect to specific numbers for things.
Mm-hmm. And, in the Shui world, it's normal. Oh, the 4 is not so good, maybe. In Asia, everybody needs to have an 8. A car plate with an 8 is more expensive and everything. Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, looking at those, but it's also looking at division, multiplication, subtraction, addition. You know, those movements, you know, are certainly, you know, changes that are created by putting numbers together. So, you know, so, and, you know, people can go look up, you can go Google numbers as what numbers are good for healing allergy or this or that. So there are people, there's a
numerology itself is all about numbers.
Numerology, sure. So we can create shifts of changes with numbers. And then the other is the use of, which is, you know, light, color, shape, movement. And so that's where I've spent the last 15 years is trying to study those effects and what kind of results and shifts and changes by using those things. The nice things about using them is you're overriding the neocortex because the neocortex can handle 20 to 40,000 bits of information per second, and your subconscious, the rest of your brains can handle, you know, that 200 to 400,000 bits of information per second. So with that, you can do more, you can create more shift and more change more effectively utilizing the geometry, the complex geometrics, than you can with the numbers or the words. I also find that using the numbers and the words, you can only get a lock. You know, there's lots of therapies that are out there, and the ones that I've worked with and tested, that the best I've found is it can create a lock, and you make a change, and how persistent is it to remain? I would call it, you're locking it in, and the locks. The best I've seen is 95%, and so that's one of the things that I was searching for: is how do we create 100% lock? How do we get it to lock and stay? And using the numbers and using the words, you can get a 99% lock, which is better than the 95% that most therapies get.
Well, that is so interesting, Ken. Unfortunately, we're coming to the end of this session. And I would love to dive deeper into all the geometry. If someone wants to know more about it, is this possible to contact you, or you just work more secretly? If someone really wants to go, how can they find you if it's possible?
Well, if they want to find me, they can email me at doc@cv, like curriculum vitae, cv-4d.
Okay. Or you just can add your email here under the video.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can email me there, and mm-hmm. you know, if they have questions, and we can refer them to websites or to books or whatever they're interested in.
Yeah, so at the moment, just I can say thank you, Ken, for these insights, really touching. And then at least I feel already, something is happening, going through with all the thoughts of, and opening up. And hope all these listeners here that you also get an idea what is possible for human performance and for society performance. And I hope we could give you a better outlook for the future. So it's up to you to use it, or maybe even contact Ken, and for sure listen to the next episode of Inspiration Radio. Thank you for being part of it. And if you like, share and hear you next week. This was another episode of Winspiration, wisdom and information to support you getting out of illusions, false identifications, limiting beliefs. We all have the power and potential to be more, do more, have more, give more. Reality is what is possible in the universe, and the best is yet to come. If you want to dive deeper into possibilities of creating the extraordinary future, go to winspiration.global or to wolfgangsonnenburg.com. More information and some free downloads, like the email program Dream Goals Reality or a copy of the book The Best Is Yet to Come, can be found on the UK Health Radio website under the Listen on Demand and Presenters section. Join us again next week on the Winspiration Show for more wisdom and information to create your extraordinary future.